Just to give a little bit of context to tonight, we've been working on an idea, and a lot of people here tonight have not been here at the previous shiurim, but there's been a theme developing over the last four or five shiurim, and tonight takes that further. Not that you need to know the earlier, although everything is available online, by the way. All the shiurim are available on iawaken.org. You just need to go to the Parsha, the Torah section, go to Parshas, and look for the most recent date, and you'll see the shiurim of the last few weeks. But you don't need to know that for this week. But I'm going to give you the general context of what it is we were talking about, so that you'll appreciate where we're taking it to this week. We've been talking about a really important and different sort of idea in terms of current thinking. And that is the idea of what the Sefer HaYetzirah called. You remember the first of the series was on Parashas Mishpatim, and we talked there about the Sefer HaYetzirah, which is that Kabbalistic work, difficult and not very well understood or known, attributed to Avraham. It's written in poetic form, probably the oldest work that we have, if the attribution to Avraham is a correct and a true one. And one of the things it refers to there is a bris yochid hamechuvon b'emtza, a covenant of oneness which is focused in the middle. And that was talking about the five and the five spheres, that the various different spheres of Kabbalah are kind of counterbalanced, five against five. We talked about the Ten Commandments being balanced, five against five. But the idea we took from that is energy exists when there is polarity. When there are two polar forces that are different and opposite, then energy can exist. And spirituality is about energy. Torah is about energy. Kedusha is about energy. All the things we work with are about energy. And this bris yochid, this covenant, we defined as a restraining force that holds polarity in equilibrium. That when you've got a very strong male and female, so in Kabbalah we don't talk about positive and negative, we talk about a male and female force. So when you've got these two polar forces, the male force and the female, the masculine and the feminine force, they could destroy each other. And they can cancel each other out, and then you have no energy at all. So the destruction is not necessarily by means of some major explosion. Sometimes it's just by neutralization. If you've got polarity that neutralizes, then you've got no energy. When you reduce elements to their lowest common denominator, there's no energy. Everything's kind of flat. There's energy when there is polarity. But you need to hold that polarity in equilibrium, and that's what the Sefer HaYetzirah calls the Bris Yochid. That covenant of oneness, that very focused idea of godliness itself that keeps the polarity balanced. Now we took that further and we said, when you've got the polarity kind of separated and insulated by this bris, then you can build what we called potential energy. So we talked about the idea if you have a body of water and there is no potential energy, then the water is level. It will be completely flat. And you'll have the same depth of water on one part as you would on the other part, certainly if the bottom of the container was flat and equal. So if you had a flat riverbed or a flat lake, and you had water contained in the lake, and you didn't have a partition anywhere in the lake, then the level of the lake would be the same all the way around. But if you dam the river up, if you dam the inlet up, then you have the potential of building up more water on the one side of the wall than on the other side of the wall. So when we talk about this restraining force, this restraining force that we call this bris, what this does is it allows potential energy to build up on one side so that you have more on the one side than the other side. And we took that further and we said what the idea here is, that when the potential exceeds the actual, you have attraction. Now you've heard about this law of attraction. And as we discussed, the law of attraction, it's all very nice and makes a whole lot of sense. The fact is, if the law of attraction really worked, everybody would be wealthy, everybody would have everything they want, there would never be a recession, we could all attract whatever we wanted. But it isn't so simple. And the reason it isn't so simple is because there's some conditions to the law of attraction. You can attract all sorts of things. You can attract goodness, but you need to have various pieces in place. And the most important piece that you need to have in place is a differential between potential and actual. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is when you meet somebody, if their actual exceeds their potential, that means you meet them and you get the feeling that if you know them for much longer, you're not going to discover anything more than you've already seen. In fact, maybe the longer you know them, the more disappointed you'll get. Has that ever happened to you before? Meet somebody, impressed, and as you get to know them more, the impressiveness deteriorates. That's when actual exceeds potential. And in our world of consumerism and marketing, that's usually the case. Because what people sell is the actual. They put it out front, and they put more up front than it really exists, so that you buy. And we do that with ourselves. We tend to project sometimes a lot more than we are. Our image is much more than our identity. And when image exceeds identity, you can't attract. Because what attracts you to someone? When you look at them and you say, yeah, that's quite interesting, and the more you get to know them, you feel the more there is to get to know, the more you want to get to know. That's attraction. Attraction is when you know there's more under the surface than at the surface. When you sense that there's less under the surface than at the surface, then there is no attraction. There's, in fact, repulsion. You want to get away because there's a sucking energy. If somebody comes into interaction with you and there are a lot of noise and glitz on the outside, but a lot of emptiness on the inside, they draw energy from you. And you want to move away from them. If somebody comes as very subtle on the outside, and you're kind of intrigued, and the more you kind of get to know them and question them, you find there's just layer after layer after layer. You want more. You become attached to them. You're attracted to them. So we are attracted to those things. We are attracted to situations where the potential energy is much greater than the apparent. Instead of talking actual, maybe let's talk about potential and apparent. When the apparent energy is less than the potential, you are attracted. That's something you want to know about. What about investments? If the apparent value is more than the actual value, do you buy or sell? You sell. If the apparent value is less than the actual value, you buy. That's how it is with energy. We are attracted to situations, to assets, to people, to forces where the apparent is less than the actual. That is something that attracts us. And we call that, using other terminology, by the way, tsniut. That's what tsniut is. Tsniut is where the actual is hidden, so that the potential is, where the potential is hidden, so that the apparent is never more than the potential. That's the important part of it. That's really what the word tsniut, and tsniut goes far beyond issues of dress or no dress is one of the issues. Tzniut is a way of being. It's a way of behaving. Our whole religious interaction is one of tzniut, meaning that the religiousness of a person, the Torah of a person, is beneath the surface more than it is above the surface. Certainly that's the way that our tradition has always been. Things have got a little wonky today. Where there's a, what are we dealing with? We spoke about it our last year, when you get a disappointment, when identity emerges as completely different and nowhere near image, then we get disappointed. We spoke about the Lance Armstrong situation, where you had a very shiny image, which we assumed was the identity. And then all of a sudden you realized, no, the image was shining, the identity was nothing. There was nothing there. And then we feel this terrible disappointment, terrible disappointment. We want to have nothing more to do with him. That's when where's that gap? And in religion, it's the same thing. That's why in Lithuanian circles, certainly at the time until the Second World War, anything which was external was not done unless it was absolute halakha. So tzitzit were worn under jackets, or certainly they weren't visible from the outside. and many external exhibits of religiousness were hidden. It was as you spoke to the person, as you got to know them, you started realizing, oh, there's such depth in this person, there's such understanding, there's such Torah. There was a Hasidic Rebbe, and the Hasidim have a different approach to this, but there was a Hasidic Rebbe who sent some emissaries to the yeshivas in Lithuania to figure out what's going on there, what's it all about. And he said that when they came back, they reported to the Rebbe, we went into the Lithuanian yeshivas, the young men in the yeshivas looked like Gentiles and davened like angels. That's tzniut. Look at them, you can't tell. I can't tell. It's an ordinary person dressed in an ordinary way. It looks good. You can't tell anything about how religious they are. You watch them davening. You speak to them. You engage with them. You realize you're dealing with an angel. That's attraction. But when you see the person with all the religious exhibition and you go and you're attracted to them because you want to ask them a shiloh because you see this must be a knowledgeable person, he's got his tzitzis way out, big hat, long coat, must know what he's talking about, and you start talking to him and he kind of doesn't really understand all that much, that's repulsion. So you want to move away, there's no attraction. So this idea in the many different parts of life, this idea of the bris yochid, of having that restraining force that avoids everything that is inside being seen outside, so that energy isn't leaked, so that energy stays inside, builds up inside, and therefore is a power of attraction. And we've got that idea, we used another halachic term to explain it, the whole idea, which applies on Shabbos, which we'll talk about today also, is the Rishus HaYachid and the Rishus HaRabin, private property and public property, two different domains. And there's an idea of a barrier between them. That's the idea of an Eruv. The idea of an Eruv is to create a barrier between private property. Now the question is just how far out you want to define private property. Is it just your home? Or is it a group of homes? Or is it a whole community? That determines the idea of Eruv is not just to put a string around the city, it's and to enable people to carry. The idea of Eruv is really to define community. How far out do you want the sense of community to go? A sense of this all being part of the internal, part of the area where the energy is inside. So that's very briefly the idea that we've been developing. So what I would like you to look now is at the very end of this last week's parsha. We're going to talk about the very end of the last week's parsha and the very beginning of next week's parsha. So that's Shemos chapter 34, end of 34. And now this is the end of Kitiso, so it's the end of the whole section of the giving of the Torah. The first time, the golden calf, going back up the second time, coming down again, all of that is completed by the end of Kitiso. And at in the Maftir of Kitiso, chapter 34, verse 33, Vayachal Moshe midaber itom, and Moshe finished talking to them, Vayitein al ponov masve, and he placed on his face a masve. What's a masve? How does the article translate it? A mask. Placed a mask on it. Ring a bell? Does that sound like anything? What is it? Ego masachan. I think more recently than that. Think about 3 minutes ago. Sorry? Purim? No, I think 3 minutes ago, not 2 weeks ago. Hiding. He's hiding something. He wants a Rishus HaYachid. He wants something not to be visible. What is it that he wants not to be visible? What happened just before then? What did they notice on him? If you look back at verse 30, Vayar Aaron v'chol b'nei Yisrael es Moshe, Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moshe, v'hinei koran or ponov. There was an energy that was being transmitted from his face. An aura. But this doesn't mean an aura just in a kind of a figurative sense. This is real energy. Light. Fire. Real energy. And we've got other cases of that much more recently than Moshe, where people have been able to radiate fire, heat, from their faces. We've got Tanoim and Amoraim that were able to do that in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. And even today it's possible. I've watched it in a completely non-Jewish environment. The measurement of energy that one can transmit, not just from your face, from your whole being. And it, with instruments, it's possible to measure the levels of that energy. It's electrical energy that we are able to put out. But you need to also be able to preserve that energy so that the potential exceeds the actual. Because the strange thing is, the more you preserve the potential, and the less is apparent, the more you can radiate. Because you don't radiate by visual. You don't have to see this aura of Moshe to be able to feel his effect. On the contrary, Moshe then puts on a mask so that only for short moments can they actually see it. For the rest of the time, it's behind the mask, which means you can feel it, you don't see it. Sometimes we can feel things better if we don't see them. Sometimes when we see things, we're looking at them very superficially. If we don't allow ourselves to see, that's why blind people have very, very sharp senses in every other area of sense. At night, you can hear a lot better. You can feel somebody comes close. You can feel that if it's very dark. You can feel people's presence. You can't do that when the light is on because you can see. We tend to default to our easiest sense. So if I can see, then I don't have to worry about feeling. And that's part of the problem between a husband and wife very often in a relationship. They see each other all the time, so they don't have to feel each other. It's a really good exercise sometimes not to see each other and to try the feeling. And it's something that one can use when one is away. Why is it that absence makes the heart grow fonder? It's not just because I don't have it so I want it. There's a bit of that as well. But my only way of accessing somebody who's far is to feel them. Can't see them, can't hear them. The only way I can access the love of that person or for that person is by feeling. And one's able to then feel. So the master, when you're able to mask the potential energy, you enable people to feel it, to experience it without visual, without having to see it. And so Moshe realizes if he wants this force of radiation to really be powerful, he needs to mask it from the people. He needs to hide it a little bit. And if you look at the first reference that I gave you at the top of the handout page, which is the Ibn Ezra from this very section, ulefi dati, and according to my opinion, kish sam hamasle, he placed this mask over his face ba'avur kavod ha'or, because of the honor of the light, the value of the light, shechidesh Hashem befonav, which Hashem innovated in him. So that they won't, the Jewish people won't see it at all times. Only when he's speaking the words of Hashem, then they'll see it. When he goes into the Olmoed, then he also takes the mask off. He talks to God face to face. That he wanted to hide this. This was so honorable. So you remember when we spoke about the Aaron? Isn't it amazing that the Luchos, the tablets that Moshe brought down from Sinai, in today's society, what would we do with those tablets? If Moshe came down from God with tablets, what would we do with them? They would be put on display in museum with a permanent internet camera available so that you could go online and see them at any time. What does the Torah do? Goes into an aron, puts a lid on the aron, throws a drape over the lid, puts a curtain in front of the lidded box, and forbids anybody from going anywhere near it ever, except aron once a year. Why? Because of the force that it has. It's more powerful if you don't see it. In the world in which we are, we've removed all spiritual energy. I spoke last Shabbos, in Venice about the soul erosion that occurs, particularly in the United States, because we're so visual, we're so open, we're so out there, we're so insensitive to boundaries and borders, that we've lost that spiritual power. The luchos, the the tablets are put into the oven is closed, it's sealed, it's covered, it's hidden. We don't go anywhere near it. Does that mean we can feel it or we can't feel it? Absolutely we can feel it. But you have to make an effort to feel it. You don't have to make an effort to see something. You have to make an effort to feel something that you can't see. But when you're making the effort to feel something that you can't see, then you access the spirituality of it. If you're seeing, you're not accessing spirituality. You can't access spirituality when you see. What does God say when Moshe says, "Show me your honor"? What does God say? Not possible. You can't see me and access me. Visualization, actual vision, detracts from spiritual access. You can access things that you can't see better than you can access things that you can see. Now, moving into the next parsha, beginning of chapter 35, the coming parsha, Vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael, and Moshe gathers together the whole Jewish community, Vayomer alehem, and he says to them, Eile hadavorim asher tzivo Hashem, these are the things which God commanded you, la'asoyseisom, to do them, sheishes yomim te'aseh melacho, for 6 days work may be done, uvayom ashvi yelochem kodesh, the seventh day should be for you holy, Shabbos Shabbason LaHashem, a Sabbath of Sabbaths. Kol ha'aseh bo melacha yumos, anybody who does melacha on those days, on that day will be put to death. Lo yisavaru esh b'chol moshveisechem, not only don't you do any of the regular melachas, but you can't even do melachas that are necessary for eating, for food, such as cooking. B'yom ha'Shabbos on Shabbos, that may not be done either. So that's that next piece. Now, look at a very interesting Balaturim, the next piece of the on the handout. Again, if you don't have a handout or you're not familiar with Hebrew, it's difficult for you to read the Hebrew without vowels, don't worry. So I'm reading it all, translating it all, you'll hear it. And I guess if you're hearing and you're not seeing, you might access more of its spirituality even. So the Balaturim says, the Balaturim is a fascinating commentary. The Balaturim is the author of the great Tur. The Tur was the first real massive body of halachic, compendium of halachic thought, perhaps more than anything that had been done before in terms of bringing together the different lines and channels of halacha into one place. And on the Chumash he wrote the Bala Turim, and that's very short notes, brief notes he makes. And they border on the Kabbalistic, they're a little bit midrashic, a little bit Kabbalistic. And he writes the following, Vayakil, Ksiv Le'el, what was the last thing we learned about? Just before this, says the Balaturim. Kikoron Oeponov, that there was a spiritual radiation coming from Moshe's face. That's what we just learned. The Sanichle Parsha Shabbos, the very next thing is Shabbos. Now it's true, they're two different parshas. One was last week and the other will be read next week. But they're still juxtaposed in the text. They're still right next to each other. Loima, this teaches, she'eno doime kirun ponim shel Shabbos lishar hayomim, that the spiritual radiation that you can project on Shabbos is no comparison to what you project during the week, or the other way around. What the spiritual radiation you project during the week cannot be compared to what you can project on Shabbos. Now you might say, okay, but that's talking about Moshe. Moshe is the guy who projects spiritual radiation, not you and me. But where does the Balaturim take this from? He takes this from a Medrash in Breishis, next piece that I've quoted. So the next paragraph is still Balaturim, we'll come back to that. But go down to the next item, Breishis Rabo, from Breishis Parsha Yud Aleph, that next piece of Medrash. When it says by Kadesho, so Hashem sanctified Shabbos. How do you access that sanctity? Where do you see it? The Medrash deals and gives various different facets of accessibility of Kedusha. Shabbos comes, Shabbos Kodesh, and now you want to feel the Kedusha. You want to experience the sanctity of Shabbos. How do you do that? What are you looking for? Says the Medrash, Be'er Ponov Shel Odom. The energy that the face projects. That's where you can see Shabbos. Lo doime oponov shel odom kol yomos ha-Shabbos k'moshu doime b'Shabbos, says the Medrash. The energy that the face projects during the week cannot be compared to the energy that the face projects on Shabbos. And this is incredible, because this tells us that the fact that Moshe had this beam of light coming out of his face was not unique to him. We can all do it. And maybe it's not that easy for us to project something that is visible to thousands of people, but there's a force, there is a power which we are emitting. The face has the ability to project energy. And people are getting much more attuned to that fact. And the energy that you project on the weekday is not the same as the energy that you can project on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, it's possible to project much greater energy. Why do we bless our children on Shabbos? There's more energy, there's more power. It doesn't mean you can't bless them on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You can bless them 10 times a day. Bless them all the time. Nothing wrong with blessing your children. But don't waste a Shabbos opportunity. Because your face is putting out a level of energy. Hopefully, that's the idea. You've got to get to a level where it is. Otherwise, your blessing is the same as it would be on Thursday. But if it's really to be a Shabbos blessing, then you need to be in a state where you're actually projecting energy. And that should be something that people can sense. It should be something tangible that one can sense. And that says the Medrash. You want to see the Kedusha of Shabbos? You're going to see it in the Torah. How do you see it? Where do you see it? You see it on people's faces. That's where you see it. You see a kirunor, you see a projection of energy that comes from people on Shabbos, that you know people are much more spiritually energetic on Shabbos. They're energized. All that energy that is built up during the week, and now comes Shabbos, and there's some degree of barrier, and we'll talk about what that barrier and boundary is, means that there's a force inside them which projects this energy outward. So let's have a look a little bit at what this is, how Shabbos works to be able to project this energy. How does it work? How does it happen? What is it? And here I'm going to draw those who were at the dinner on Friday night in Venice will excuse me drawing from some of those ideas to explain what we're talking about here. What did God create on Shabbos? Let's understand the essence of that creation. Because we're told, we say in Kiddush every Friday night, V'yachal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i, Hashem finished the creation on the seventh day, and Chazal asked, he didn't really finish on the seventh day, he finished on the sixth day, and there are all sorts of answers given. And the one answer that is given is that he finished what he created on the seventh day. Well, Shabbos created Shabbos on the seventh day. Well, that's all very well, but what is Shabbos? Shabbos is the day he rested. Rested means you stop creating. So it becomes a bit of a tautology. He created rest, but rest means he didn't create. So what did he do? You just go round and round in circular reasoning. So what was it that God really created? So if you look at the Targum Yonasan, the next piece that I quote in the handout, this is the Targum Yonasan from the first verse of chapter 2 in Bereishis, which is the words that we say in Kiddush, V'yachal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i. On that, the Targum Yonah says, "V'shalimu b'raisi shemaya ve'ara v'chol chalvoson." The seventh day, God completed the creation. So the Targum Yonah, one of the two classic translations, Aramaic translations of the Torah, and some of the earliest translations that we have, translates v'yachal from the word lechalot, to finish, to complete. God completed the creation on the seventh day. Let's try and understand that a little bit more carefully, because we're also told that he didn't really complete the creation. There were some things he didn't get to finishing. So the whole force of shading, you've heard people talk about shading. Shading is this negative force. They're like ghosts. They're kind of beings that exist in the world that you can't see, but they have forces and they're negative. They can be destructive. And we're told in Kabbalah, those were beings that God didn't finish creating. And then came Shabbos. He had to stop. So they weren't finished. The message is, the creation wasn't finished. If God had more time, how long would it have taken him to finish the creation, do you think? Another second he would have done it? Or would it have been endless? Endless. He will always find something else to do a little bit better, to go a little further. When are you going to end it? It's one of the difficult things people say, one of the things that authors find the most difficult thing to do is to hand their manuscript in for publication. Because that means that it's finished. And they know it's not finished. They know if they had it another week, they would improve it further. So why go and hand out something that's incomplete? And then they keep it next week, and then they hand it a little further. Winston Churchill talks about how his publisher had to grab his manuscripts out of his hand and force them out of his hand. He wouldn't let go because he knew how much work there was still to do on them. So I'll just take questions towards the end of it, rather, otherwise it interrupts people a little bit. What does it mean Hashem finished? So we explained on Friday night that Hashem in this creates a new set of dimensions of reality. So normally the way you finish a piece of work is by determining its dimensions. So if you say, for example, you're going to research a particular work, you're going to research what a particular author wrote on a particular subject, that has dimensions. When you've gone through everything that person wrote, you finished your research. But if you were to say something like, I'm going to research, the role of time in reality. I'm going to research relativity. How long is that going to take you? You'll never finish. There'll always be something else to discover and something else to find. So you've got to put limits to it. What Hashem created on Friday evening was the idea that time is also a limit. So you can say to yourself, you can say, for example, I'm going to read, I'm going to read Shakespeare. And then you say to yourself, well, when are you going to be finished? You say, well, I'm going to be finished when I'm finished Hamlet. That's how far I'm going. You finish Hamlet, it's over, you're finished. But you could also say, I'm going to read Shakespeare until 6 o'clock this evening. And then at 6 o'clock this evening, you're finished. Does that mean you've completed everything that Shakespeare wrote? No, but the task you set yourself has been completed. So Hashem created the idea that you can determine completion by a time dimension, not only by a spatial dimension. When you're talking about how much of something, normally when you talk about how much of something, you talk about a physical dimension. You talk about weight or volume. Or you talk about distance. Or you've got to use one of the dimensions, one of the physical dimensions. What Shabbos introduces is the idea that completion can be determined by a time dimension, not a physical dimension. So you can say, Ham Shabbos, your week is finished. It doesn't matter what you didn't do. Your week is complete. There's no more time for the week. It is finished. It's complete. And we spoke on Shabbos about the fact that the only other time we have that is with death. Death is the one time when you realize your life is complete. And you can't say to God, hang on a little while, I haven't finished the Shakespeare I said I was going to finish, or whatever. That's interesting.
There's nothing hidden about that.
The idea that when time runs out, it's exactly the same as a physical dimension running out. It doesn't really matter. So you have those two different forms of determining completion. That was the chiddush, that was the innovation of Shabbos. That just as at the end of a lifetime, death determines the end, and that means the life is complete, so came Shabbos and the creation was complete. Why was the creation complete? Not because it was finished. It wasn't Shabbos because God completed the creation. God completed the creation because it was Shabbos. He set that up to start with. The creation is going to take 6 days. When Shabbos comes, I stop. And what isn't created isn't going to be created. That's the end of it. Now that's an amazing power if we would use it right, correctly, because one of the most wonderful feelings is the feeling of completion. When you set yourself a task and it's done, it's finished. And you can sit back and you can relax because you finished your work. I don't remember when last I had that feeling. I don't know about you, but it's a kind of, I have a kind of a nostalgic sense of what it used to feel like once, because nowadays that kind of doesn't happen. There used to be a time where your work was over at a certain time, there was some defined stuff that you used to do. Now there is such an overwhelming amount and an opportunity to do, even things that you didn't set yourself to do. When you finish one thing, you want to carry on and do something else. There's no end to it. So the idea of that feeling of completion is something that we are deprived of. I think the only people that have it are people who work for the government. They finish their job and then they relax. They get their check, they relax, they take it easy. And I understand that in the United States that's more than the majority of people already. But for those of us who don't work for the government, we don't have that feeling of work's over. We're finished. We've done what we have to do. We never have that feeling. The only time we have it is on Shabbos. If we understand that come Shabbos, work is over. It's done. It's finished. So Shabbos allows us, and that's why Shabbos is called Me'ein Olam Habo. Because when you come to Olam Habo, you don't have to worry, you're finished. Work is done. There's no more of what kind of do I still have to do today, and what am I going to do tomorrow, and when am I going to finish this, and what about this that I do? All that stuff is gone. It's all finished. It's complete. Is it exactly how you wanted it? Irrelevant. It is what it is, and it's finished. That's Olam Haba. And Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. It's quite interesting, you know, with the story of the Pope retiring. Quite an interesting story. First time in 6 or 7 centuries. I've been thinking a little bit. I've been a little bit envious of him. I mean, can you imagine? He doesn't have... It was really very, very courageous. For whatever reason, he did it. But like, it's not like drifting into irrelevancy and all that. Actually making a mindful decision of, you know what, I'm finished. It's done. Somebody else can take over. I want to sit and daven for the rest of my life. I want to say Tehillim. I want to connect with God. I want to sit and learn. I want to walk in the garden. My work is over. It's done. Quite an interesting thought. And we have that every Shabbos. That idea of going into a 25-hour retirement where you just engage with God because your work is done. There's nothing more to do. That's the gift of Shabbos. The ability to determine completion by a time dimension rather than by a spatial dimension liberates the human being and enables them to experience the freedom of completion even when from a physical dimension perspective they may not yet be complete. So that's what Hashem does. And when Shalima Braisa Shmaya Baravachol told the same as the Targum Yonason says means God introduced the idea of completion achieved by time rather than completion achieved by physical measures. And then the next line there is the Targum Unculus, the other important classical Aramaic translation, who translates Vayachal a little bit differently and says, V'ishtachlelu Shemaya V'ara V'chol Cheleihan. The heavens and the earth were finished off. So Yonason translates it, were finished, and Targum and Unculus translates it as was finished off. What does finishing off mean? Those last little details that make the difference between something that is superb and something that is mediocre. But those last little details. You look at two suits in the store, the one that is properly finished off can command a premium of multiples more than the one that isn't properly finished off. Finishing off is a level of completion that's not time-based, that's something else. It's just the finishing off that adds unbelievable value to the thing you're working on. And so much value is left unclaimed by people who are just not willing to put that extra bit of effort into finishing something off and making it beautiful. That idea of beauty, just to make it beautiful, to make it a finished article, that is so important. And so the Targum Unculus learns via Chalalukim by Yamashvi, Shabbos is the finishing off of the Bria. The creation is completed, not in the sense that it wasn't complete before, but this is the boundary line, this is the border, this is the lining. This is what just makes it something really, really special. And if you go into the next piece, which is from the Medrash again, we'll get a little bit more of a clear understanding there. Geniva Omar, Geniva says, Moshal lemelech she'osa lechupo. So it's quite interesting. If we take this word vayachal, it has several meanings that we've touched on already, and we're about to touch on a third one. Vayachal comes from the word kol, which means everything. And as we explained, everything is always relative to the container. You can only have everything when you've preset a measure. So if you say your measure is, you know, this container, well, when that container is full, then cool, you have it all. But if your container is not pre-measured, you've never got it all. And Shabbos tells us you can pre-measure your container with time. So when the time has been filled, you can say, I've got it all. That's as much as I'm doing today. I'm working till 6 o'clock, and at 6 o'clock I'm getting home and I'm having a glass of wine with my wife, and we're going to relax and chill. That's what we're going to do, because at 6 o'clock I've got it all. All doesn't mean everything I could possibly have. All means everything I set out to have. And we can use time as one of the measures. We don't have to use place. That's vayachal meaning kol, all. Vayachal also means shichlul, to be able to finish something off. But there's another word in Vayachal which is kala, a bride. And that links to the whole theme of Shabbos and Boyichalo, Boyichalo. What is the bride element? Says Geniva, Mashal Melech Shasa L'Chupa, a prince, a king who makes a chupa, Vetziro, and he embroiders the chupa, Vetziro, and he covers it and he makes it all beautiful. And now he's standing there, chupa's up, beautiful flowers all over the place, the hall is decorated, everything is absolutely magnificent. The band is waiting to play. The king is standing. What's missing? Ma'isal chaseiro. Kala. No bride. Until there's a bride, it's not a chuppah. The structure is there. The poles are there. The cover is there. The rabbi is there. The chazan is there. The wine is there. The ring. It's all there. It's still not a chuppah. The finishing touch is the kala. She makes it a chuppah. Without her, it's not a chuppah. You don't even call it a chuppah. It's just a nothing, it's a thing, it's a structure. Kishitikanes l'tricho. When she comes into the chuppah, then the chuppah is complete. Kach me'al yaha'ilam chosu, Shabbos. In the same way, the world without Shabbos is a structure. Our 6 days are just structures. It's doing and doing and doing. It's building, it's creating, it's making the chuppah. If you don't have a Shabbos afterwards, you've got to sit back and say, what was it for? What was I doing it for? And sometimes we think kind of long term, I'm doing it that I can retire one day. I'm doing it so that my children will have something. I'm doing it that I can educate my children. No, think shorter term than that. I worked for 6 days that I could take the seventh day off. That's what I did. I worked for 6 days that I could take the seventh day off. Imagine we did that not only with days. Imagine we worked for 6 weeks and then took a week off. And then we worked for 6 months and took a month off. And then we worked for 6 years and took a year off. That wouldn't be a bad life. That's what we ought to do. That's the idea of a Shabbos, is that a seventh of your time, you work for 6/7, so that you can have a seventh that you don't have to work. That's how it is, and you define that with time. You say, what is enough? Enough is as much as I can do in 6 days, not seven. Enough is as much as I can do in 6 days. When I've reached enough, 6 days, I shut down for a day. That's the seventh day. That makes the 6 days worthwhile. Because now whatever I can achieve on Shabbos has been achieved through the 6 days that I was able to support my Shabbos. I was able to keep my Shabbos. Which leads us into the next piece, which is a statement of Orach Chaim built on these words in this first sentence of Vayakhel. Eile hadvorim asher tzivor Hashem. These are the things which God commanded you. La'asos oisom, to do them. So which are the things, which are the matters that God commanded you? So he goes on to say, Sheshishorim ta'aseh malacha, in 6 days. So some people learn that what God commanded you was the building of the Mishkan, which you have to do in 6 days, not on the seventh. But the other way of learning it is, these are the things which God commanded you to do. Sheshishorim ta'aseh kol malachtecho v'yom ha'shvi'i Shabbos l'akhir. You've got to make a Shabbos. And if you look at the Orach Chaim here, Oid Yisba'ir al-pi divrei mzal. This can be explained also according to the Chazal and the Mechilta. Rabbi Elozar ben Parato omer, minayin shekol ha-meshamer Shabbos, malin olov ki'ilu asor. By keeping Shabbos, God treats you as if you created Shabbos. That's what it is. We've just talked about what the creation of Shabbos is, what an innovation it is. The idea that you can determine completion by time, not just by space. Dichti v'shomru la'asos is a Shabbos. I've explained various understandings of this in the paragraph in Kitisa, which we say on Shabbos morning in the Davring, in the Shomru Bnei Israel, Lasos es HaShabbos, to make the Shabbos. V'drosha zu zeh mekomav, hu emro eile advorim asher tzivah Hashem la'asos oisom, these are the things which God commanded to create them. Perush hadvorim atzmon shehen shabbosos, atem oisim oisom. These things themselves that I'm about to tell you, Shabbos, you make it, you create Shabbos. It's not that God created Shabbos, God created the capacity for you to create Shabbos. And if you don't create Shabbos, there's no Shabbos for you. That's not a Shabbos. Shabbos has to be created, it's a work of creation. And back again, if we look at the kalah piece, you know what it goes to make it, to make a beautiful wedding, what kind of work goes into make an event. Shabbos is an event. And you've got to create an event. Events don't just happen. There's a huge amount of work that goes into the creation of an event. But the idea of having an event at the beginning of the week and an event at the end of the week now becomes the bridge between two major events, Shabbos to Shabbos. That's what Jewish life is. The living from this one event to the other, with the 6 days ready to be able to prepare that next event. We're always preparing the event, and the event is Shabbos. Because Shabbos is the time where we can really grow as human beings, where we can really develop ourselves. The rest of the times we're accomplishing things, we're doing. Shabbos, we're growing. Shabbos is the time where we can build more potential than actual. The rest of the time we're very active in the world and we're using up all the energy. Shabbos is the time we can replenish. The rest of the week, where people are we're exposed, we're interacting, we're in Rosh Hashanah, we're in public property. Shabbos, we come back inwards, and we can rejuvenate ourselves, re-energize ourselves, access ourselves, so that we get this radiation coming from, we're projecting this aura, which we can't project during the week to the same extent. And it's in fact in the Ramban, the next piece, which we don't need to read inside it, which you can have a look at, where the Ramban says it's the style of the Torah to go into a lot of detail and then to give the general principle. So for example, he says there are lots of laws when it comes to business that you can't do and that you've got to be careful of, and the weights and measures and honesty and all the things that you've got to be careful, bribery, all the things that you have to be careful about in business. But then there's a principle of sisa teva yosha, you must also be straight. So sometimes when you're given a lot of details, you can use your legal and halachic genius to figure out ways to kind of work around the details. That's all fine, says the Ramban, but that's not sisa teva yosha. There's still a law. Apart from all the details, is it straight? Is it true? Is it the right thing to be doing? Question that one has to ask. And it's quite interesting. I remember doing a survey of Yeshiva High School boys about 10 years ago, a little more maybe, and one of the things they considered as their biggest challenge is they were being raised without a value system. And I said, what do you mean you're being raised without a value system? You're in a Yeshiva High School. Everything's, I said, those aren't values, those are rules. And we, you know, and the idea is how to get around the rules. That's the thinking. These are the rules, and how can we get around them? But we see our non-Jewish, our Christian friends, they have values. They ask themselves whether something's right or wrong, whether it's straight, whether it's not straight. Well, we have it too. We just don't teach these things in school. We teach the laws, but we don't teach the principle. The principle is v'asisa tov v'ayosha. And Shabbos, the same applies. He gives several examples. He says, well, lots of laws of Shabbos. You go into schools, they'll teach the laws of Shabbos, guarantee you. Girls' schools, boys' schools, they'll teach the laws of Shabbos. Says the Ramban, but what about the mitzvah's aseh? What about the positive mitzvah of tishbos? Create an event. Are they taught how to do that? How do you create an event on Shabbos which enables you to replenish your spiritual energy? How do you do that? How do you access your deeper self? How do you work and build yourself so that comes the end of Shabbos, you're now ready. Once again, your potential is much higher than your apparent. That what's inside you is so much more than what's outside on the surface. After a week of exertion, after a week of exposure, you've got one day to rebuild all of that internal resource that reestablishes you once again as having more in potential than in apparent. And you can become an attractive human being, radiating positive energy, rather than being a depleted human being, drawing on everybody else's energy because you're so desperate for energy. Shabbos is the time that you're able to build up those reserves and those resources. But how do you do it? Says the Ramban, that's tishbos. And I haven't seen schools that teach that. I haven't seen schools that teach v'asisa tov v'hayosha. How do you do what's right? How do you measure what's right? How do you know what's right? Leave aside the halachas. You can find a figure a way around every halacha. That's not the issue. I remember a guy in Yeshiva once saying to me, I said to him once, I thought he was something he was doing with the airlines was incredibly dishonest, and I told him so. So he said, come and see me tomorrow, such and such a time, and I did. And I came and he had a pile of sforim this high. And he said, I'm going to show you now and explain why what I'm doing is not dishonest. And I just said, come on, if you need so many books to convince me that what you're doing is not dishonest, it's dishonest. We spend so much time trying to outwit the system. But it's not about systems. It's about principles and values. The systems are just frameworks to help us. It's like a chuppah without a color. The way we live Yiddishkeit today is a chuppah without a challah. All the details are there. All the structure's there. Everything's there. It just has no soul. It has no purpose. What is it there for? I did an interesting experiment in Venice yesterday afternoon. I learned a piece of Chumash with the group, the beginning of last week's parsha. And I asked them, and they were magnificently honest with me. I asked them to rate its relevance to them on a scale of 0 to 10. How relevant is this piece of Chumash I've just learned with you? And they were incredibly honest. They rated it between 0 and 2. I rated it as 0, and some people rated it as 1 or 2. That's structure. By the time we'd finished and we'd learned what it really means, they rated it between 7 and 10. And that's what we've got to be doing in our Torah, is moving from irrelevance to relevance, moving from structure to soul, moving from physical to spiritual, moving from physical to energy, moving from meaninglessness to meaningfulness, bringing the bride into the chuppah. Every moment, that's what we've got to be looking at. But Shabbos is the time that we really access it, because we haven't got time during the week. We're so busy building the chuppah during the week, we don't think about the challah. Come Shabbos, that's a time when we can think about the challah. What's this for? How are we going to make it meaningful? How are we going to make it purposeful? And the value of your week is then determined by the value of Shabbos. And there are different ways to do that, and I think each person finds their way of using Shabbos correctly, and actually experiencing Shabbos correctly. It's what we need to just try and be careful is that we don't substitute the distractions of the weekday with new distractions for Shabbos. Shabbos should be a time where we're not distracted. Shabbos should be a time where we confront our souls. And we confront our souls because there aren't distractions. And we're not, as a modern nation, we're not too comfortable in that space of just being alone with ourselves a little bit. And on the one hand, it's very wonderful to have guests at our table and to entertain people. It's a wonderful mitzvah, and it's a wonderful thing to do. But just keep your own time too. Make sure that on Shabbos, you've got time just for you, for your family, where you can go deep, where you can talk about things you don't talk about during the week, where you can think about things you don't think about during the week, because you don't have another time. That's it. And the deeper you go on Shabbos, the more beautiful is the color that you bring into the chuppah. But if your Shabbos goes and it was as superficial as your weekdays, you're left with a chuppah without a color. That's not Vayechal. Vayechal, when Elohim, when Hashem finished the world, he completed it because he said, this is enough, 6 days of work is enough, now it's Shabbos time. He completed it because he was Meshachlo, he beautified it. He beautified it with Shabbos. And he completed it with the color coming to the chuppah, the one thing the world was missing. It was a structure until then. And by bringing Shabbos into it, he brings the color. The magnificence of all of this is to realize that all of this God does with time. It's not a thing. It's not an angel. It's not a person. It's not a book. It's not a movie. It's time. But we can make time so meaningful, that we can make time so powerful and so nourishing, if we treat time the same way as we treat other things. Now we say time is valuable. In fact, time is the only thing we've got that is valuable, because almost everything else there's more of. The only thing is probably property, I would guess. There's kind of a limit, the size of the world, and that's it. Still quite a lot to go. And everything else is, there's more of. We haven't run out of stuff. And I know we always worry that we're going to run out of oil, we're going to run out of... We haven't run out of anything yet. The world has not run out of anything yet. We run out of something, we find a replacement. We are going to run out of time. Each of us. Time is finite, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. There's quite a lot of research that shows, actually, apart from doing things that are careless and damaging your health and your longevity, if you're basically healthy, there's not a lot you can do to extend your life. Your life, the insurance people have got it right. They can predict the length of your life. And there's not a lot you can do to play the system. You can change the quality of your life, and you can change the quality of the last years of your life. And you can shorten your life by being careless. Not a lot you can do. There's a limit. We've all got that limit, and that day comes, and then it's Shabbos. It's over. So the only thing that's really valuable is time. And think about how we treat valuable things. You've got a painting in your home that's really valuable. You've got a piece of ceramics in your home that's incredibly valuable. You've got a car that you paid a lot of money for. You know how you treat these things? And what about time? We don't see time as an object with dimensions. That's what Shabbos is there to teach us. Time, although you can't see it, it's an object with dimensions. It's a precious object that needs to be taken care of, needs to be nourished, needs to be used carefully, not damaged, not misused, not abused. Time is the one thing that is so incredibly precious. And Shabbos is the only time that we focus on time. The rest of the week we're not focused on time, we're focused on action. Shabbos you can take it, rest from the world of action and really get into the idea of time. 25 hours of time set aside in a beautiful space from which to create an event that impacts the rest of your life. That's what a Shabbos is. So there we have an interesting bridge between last week's parsha and the coming parsha. A link into the idea of Shabbos itself, the last in this series, talking about the importance of the barrier of this boundary that allows us to build up potential and not to use all the potential to the point where the apparent exceeds the potential and we become repulsive, not in a repulsive sense, but we repel. There's no attraction to somebody or to something whose inside is less than their outside. And the Shabbos is one of the most powerful tools we have to replenish those energy reserves inside us, those internal reserves that make us attractive, that make us special, that make us deep, that make us spiritual, and enable us to live the kind of lives that the Torah intended us. So for a few minutes, if anybody has an immediate question to ask, please feel free to do so. Otherwise, we can... you can send questions to me, or we can have them at the beginning of the next session.